Hey folks, Finn here, Lydia Sass. Maybe we should introduce each other.
Maybe that's true.
Okay. This is Lydia Sass. She is a yoga instructor, bone therapy practitioner, women's prenatal and pregnancy yoga expert. I said that
don't
word.
Don't say expert.
Oh no. She means you gotta know something now. You do know something. You know lots of things. I wouldn't say it unless I trusted it. What else is she? She's a fascinating person, and that's the reason why, one of the reasons why I felt it would be a nice thing for us to sit down and have a chit chat. Who am I?
Finn. Just Finn. Not Finn Barr.
Yeah, just Finn. There we go. That's how well we know each other. This is our fourth meeting.
This is Finn, and he runs the Hop Sack, owns the Hop Sack, which is a health food store that's in Rathmines in the Swan Centre. And it's also kind of like a health and well-being hub, really. And they've started to do lots of interesting little talks, kind of host maybe some workshop things. And so it's really a whole hub for health and well-being. And we've known each other for a good while now.
Yeah.
And I guess we just kind of felt like, I've always wanted to do a podcast, but I didn't really feel like it was something I wanted to do on my own.
Okay.
Maybe fear got in the way.
Yeah, smidge.
I want to hope that it wasn't, but I think it was. And
technology fear, I mean.
Yeah, that is for sure true. We just kind of thought that it would be nice if we had a conversational-based podcast that talked around the spheres of health, well-being, mindfulness, yoga, all the stuff that comes into that health and wellness sphere, but it was a conversation between us that wasn't necessarily fact information based all the time, but there would be little bits of information and just coming from what our experiences were. So we were not setting ourselves up as the experts on this topic, but just what have we learnt along the way and what do we think. And sometimes it's just going to be us just thinking and talking.
Yeah, and so like a lot of the chats that we have in the shop with customers when we have, you know, informal consultations or whatever, we tend to, you know, be pointing people in directions as opposed to like treating ourselves as like the center of the universe to be able to like host your health needs. We're kind of saying, okay, well, this is like yesterday I had a guy in the shop who his son he's got terrible issues with his spine as a result of being tackled really badly in a rugby match. He's 17 years old and he's got like 3 major discs, one pressing on a nerve, and they're talking about like one of them is vertebrae cracked, all this sort of stuff. But he'd been through a lot of specialists and they're saying they won't operate on him yet. So basically he's on a diet of painkillers. And so, and through the conversation we had, I kind of was recommending spinal decompression and this particular machine called a reverse hyper, which has been developed by this physio/kinesiologist in the States. It's really interesting, but not a lot of people know about it. And it's a free therapy once you buy the machine. And so I spoke to him about that, and he was saying, oh God, well, I have loads of issues with my spine as well. Maybe you should. I was like, your family should have reverse hyper. Here's where to go to get it. And he was coming in looking to me to buy supplements and all sorts of different bits and bobs. And I basically sent him away with like, go look at the reverse hyper thing. Here's some stuff that might be interesting. Definitely start your son on turmeric. Think about CBD oil, all these sorts of different things. So it's not necessarily that I think we're going to be like the locus of your health, whatever, quest, definitely. But we might be able to suggest maybe ways that you can go. And you guys will be able to comment as well. And ask us what you'd like us to talk about and if there's particular needs you have.
Exactly. And we kind of think that, you know, along the way that we might, topics might just naturally spring up, and then we might be able to add in little things like little yoga pose or breathing exercise or some way that you might manage anxiety, or just little add-ons and takeaways that you'll be able to take into your life as action points, as things that we've been talking about. So mostly it's just going to be us thinking and talking and just interacting and having a nice chat.
So when you started like soaking up health knowledge, were you like scholarly when it came to skills, or were you always kind of diligent? Were you always kind of like hoovering up knowledge from a very young age?
I'd like to say I wasn't, but no. I was the kid that always had their head in a book. I wasn't really like a team sports kind of a person. Everyone would go off on Saturdays. I went to boarding school in the UK. Everyone would go off on Saturdays for their team sports thing, and I would just be on my own reading my books. I just love knowledge. I was always like that since I was little, really reading. But the main thing I think is that when I was really little, my dad was a poet. And so we often lived in quite unusual locations, like places without electricity or running water. And one of those was in the Himalayas in Nepal, in a place called Biratanti, which was like 7,500 feet up a mountain.
This is where we decided we're not going to talk about my background at all, because it's Grosvenor Road. It's a 2 up, 2 down. Anyway, back to you.
Different.
The same.
Not less valid. But obviously, because we were so far up in the mountain, when I was there, we moved there when I was about maybe six. There wasn't, well, there was a local school, which I did go to for a little bit once my Nepali had got to a level that I was able to understand, but I was more going there to meet friends,
not
for learning, because I guess my learning was kind of higher above the standard of that school at that time. But I did a foreign correspondence course, so I had to teach myself. It was basically homeschooling, but they sent you the lesson plans, and then you sat down and you had to like organize yourself around those lesson plans.
Wow. And it's not like one of those American colleges where you kind of like, oh yeah, you've got a doctorate in... Whatever, here's your PhD.
You'd think, I mean, I think for lots of people it wouldn't work, but for me, being the child that I was, it did work.
Self-lead.
And I was just, you know, soaking up that information.
Wow.
So I think that's sort of set that environment of learning and that quest for knowledge. But because we lived there, we lived this really healthy lifestyle, there wasn't anything, there were no processed foods. We didn't have, like, electricity or any of that kind of stuff.
Fridge in the ground?
No, we didn't. We had a generator that worked sometimes.
Oh, God.
So we had a fridge, and sometimes it was on, sometimes it wasn't. So it was just literally whatever fresh produce came about. And then we were just outdoors all day. Like, me and my brother were just literally catching frogs or riding ponies up the mountain or playing.
Wow.
And I had this, like, epic immune system that was just strong. Never got sick. Great.
Okay.
Came back to the UK, I think when I was about 9, went into school, strong immune system all the way through school, everything great. And then when I got to like 17, I got glandular fever, and it was undiagnosed for a really long time. And because I was that A-type personality, I just kept pushing myself in school.
Wow.
I was a scholarship student, so I had to maintain a certain grade point average. And then I just started fainting, and they didn't know what it was, and it took ages. Finally, by the time they discovered I had glandular fever, I had chronic fatigue syndrome, and I had to drop out of school for a year. And that started my health and wellness journey, because there wasn't any answers from the doctors. They didn't have anything. It was just like, you go.
And so what did you, what did you first kind of get into that you think provided some sort of gap of a, like, glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, I went to see an amazing kinesiologist called Gudrun Johnson, who is in... the UK in London, and she put me on a very, very restricted diet, kind of like a baby food diet. So everything was very simple, very pure.
So the simple carbohydrate diet, that one?
She didn't call it anything, but we had lists, and I had to food combine different things.
Yeah.
And I was off all gluten, all dairy, all sugar, all caffeine, pretty much anything with fun stuff in it, which is really challenging at 17. But my digestive system had shut down. I was losing weight. I was fainting all the time. I had so little energy.
Wow.
I remember you talking about this the other day about how the vagus nerve governs eye contact.
Yeah.
If it's not working properly or it's not toned enough, you can't maintain eye contact. Mm-hmm. So I could never have had this conversation. I would have had to look down and talk to you, or I could look up and listen, but I couldn't do those two things
together
at once. It would have been phenomenally exhausting for
That's
me to do that.
And
so with her diet, that slowly began to improve things, but not like completely.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to everyone. I went to craniosacral people. I went to everything. Nothing made a difference. And then I went to a bone therapist who lived down the road from my mom. And at that stage, I'd started getting chronic interstitial cystitis. So I had cystitis all the time, twice a month.
It's so funny. You look so healthy. It's so hilarious. Like, here you tell the story. You're like, yeah, okay, really? She'd almost be making this up. It's really horrendous.
It was really bad. I went and had a cystoscopy, it's called, an operation on my bladder to see if they could stop the cystitis, and it didn't work. It was actually awful. And I went to him one time, and all my cystitis disappeared. And then the second time, I started getting more energy, and the third time, and I just started getting much better. Now, I can't pretend that I was just suddenly back to full health. It was a 10-year journey, really, from there, to slowly start investigating stuff.
Wow.
You know, slowly started looking into diet, looking into supplements, looking into alternative therapies, and just looking at different ways of leading my life.
Yeah.
I started doing yoga more, which I had done as a little girl in Nepal. My mum led yoga retreats and had yoga retreats in the lodge that we lived in. So I'd always done it, but I'd just kind of forgotten that. You know, I'd forgotten my way to that.
But having that muscle memory, kind of like, or that exposure to it, that you knew there was something in there for you. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I was a classic teenager at that stage. You know, I was smoking, I was drinking, I was eating, like, drinking loads of Coca-Cola and eating
just a
all the
tablets.
It's
above 18.
Yes, and drinking loads and loads of coffee to get through all my exams.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And, you know, and all of that kind of stuff.
Chronic fatigue.
Yeah, terrible. So it was a long journey to sort of meander through there. But the first thing I ended up doing that was tangible from that was that once I went to university, I started training as a Bowen therapist.
Okay, wow.
Because I was so impressed by how it had helped me and the major change that it had done.
Yeah.
And I think really that first training changed the course of my life.
Wow.
I had been previously at Trinity College and I was studying philosophy and psychology.
Okay.
And
very
I was
new
there
subject
for the,
as well, though.
Yeah. I was there for the first year. And then once I started training in the Bowen therapy, it just... I just realised, okay, this is actually, that's not what I want to do. I could do that from reading. For me, you know, I could just read those books and that would give me enough of that. So I just went into Bowen therapy and from there it ended up being Bowen therapy, then yoga teacher training and pregnancy yoga teacher training.
Deeper down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Wow. And so you can describe Bowen therapy to us, for those who might not know?
So Bowen therapy works on the fascia.
Yeah.
So it's all about the fascia and the basic principle behind it is that the body has this innate healing mechanism.
Yeah.
This ability to heal itself. And what usually happens is through daily life, through the way that we move, maybe through dysfunction in body patterns, in joints, maybe you've had operations that have made a scar that has stagnation. The nerves aren't the nerve fibers aren't lying properly. So they get maybe bunched and they should be lying kind of like this. And then there's this straight pathway for the brain to send the message to go, okay, I've got a stomach problem. Here I'm going to heal that stomach problem. But what happens is they start crossing over like this. They get bunched. Or maybe if there's a scar, there's an actual blockage. It doesn't get through anymore. And what Bowen therapy does is it's a really gentle therapy where we roll. This is quite simplistic, but we roll the nerves so
and
that they lie flat again.
And is it usually used like finger pressure, or do they use tools with it, or
no,
is it
it's
all finger pressure?
It's finger pressure.
And is it like sort of like craniosacral? Is it like very mild kind of facilitative sort of work?
Exactly like that. And it can be used for emotional problems, anxiety, depression.
Physical problems kind of are anyway at some level. Yeah.
And then digestive stuff, or then physical stuff. So I might have someone who's just been in a car crash, who's broken their pelvis.
Okay.
And you can the beautiful thing about it is that you can work on people with broken bones, you can work on newborn babies.
Okay, because it is so gentle.
You can work on pregnant women because it's so gentle.
Yeah, nice.
And it's really the principle comes back to less is more and allowing the body to facilitate that healing itself.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, it's nice. It's not that common here in Ireland.
No, it's really not.
It's really
I mean, we have like things that are around there. Like, so I go to a lady who does myofascial release, who's a physio actually in Howth, but she, Deirdre Burrell, she's amazing. Don't book her. Please don't book her up. She's already busy enough. Yeah, so she comes from a very traditional physio background, but started to follow some people who are kind of at the start of kind of myofascial release technique, and now uses a very, very gentle touch. Like if you go into her from another physio, you won't be expecting what you get, which is amazing. And it's lovely to, you know, essentially your body, I remember the first craniosacral treatment I ever had as well, that was explained to me, like, you know, your body will start to do it itself. Basically, like there's somebody just basically caressing my feet. And I was like, this is really nice. And then I kind of felt like this kind of movement in my hip, particularly on this hip dysplasia thing, I'll probably keep mentioning, I'll try not to. And it started to kind of work its way out, and I found myself like jumping around the bed, like really interesting sort of body responses from just this person who is educated enough to have some intervention, but essentially it's a facilitative like thing where you're almost self-healing, you're kind of tapping into your inner physician or whatever.
Yeah, and I think it's hard for us to suspend disbelief enough.
Oh, for me,
the first time you go through those things, and I know that that's the case when people come for Bowen the first time.
I mean, you have a hippie childhood, you'd be fine. I was like, no way.
People are like, really?
Yeah.
That tiny? Like, I'll show you. Say, you know, it might be that.
Yeah.
Very gentle.
And it's relational as well, isn't it? It's not like you're not fixing something here, you're looking at something probably somewhere, pelvic or whatever.
I think people find it really hot. They're like lying there going, this is really nice. It's really relaxing. Often people fall asleep on the table.
But contact is that good anyway, isn't it?
But they're just going, is this going to make a difference? And then they often call back after the first week. You won't believe it. This thing I've had for years, it's gone. And I don't know, maybe it's the bow and maybe it is. And they're finding it hard to like attribute it to that because we're so used to needing big intervention.
Knives.
Needing,
drugs. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think what happened with me with the glandular fever was the doctors did not have answers.
Interesting.
They just had no answer. And in fact, at that stage, chronic fatigue syndrome wasn't even believed.
Well, it's still kind of fringe recognized. I mean, but you still have doctors who are saying that, like, you know, candida doesn't exist. And that's, unfortunately, there's people coming into our shop all the time who have that, you know, a self-diagnosis of chronic fatigue, which is pretty accurate. And, you know, there's lots of different origins for it. A lot of people are, tick bites are playing a large part. Mm. And Lyme's disease is certainly an advancing thing as well. But I think there's a, there's still a strong pushback, a strong will within the conventional medical profession to disavow any thoughts of you know, people's adrenals just kind of sitting down and saying no enough.
Not enough.
Yeah, and it's so easy to work on when you have the right tools. And there's, yeah. You know, I think for people in the current kind of, particularly in urban environments where there's not a lot of space given physically or, you know, socially or spiritually or whatever, to just kind of stopping.
I think that's maybe a
huge factor, and I think why we're seeing so much of it and so many of these things and persist. And like you have something that starts with glandular fever and then you push through it, because whether you're told by a doctor or whether you start to believe it yourself, that you think that you're just a little bit sick, and your body's kind of like that's the warning, that's the yellow canary in the mind, yeah. That's the red flag that people need to listen to and do it way earlier than that, way before they have glandular fever.
Yeah. I know, and it's funny, isn't it? I think, you know, you see it a lot in yoga classes. People come to yoga and they really often say at the beginning of class, so excited to come, you know, so great.
Yeah.
But by the way, I will have to leave a bit early, so I'll just, when Shavasana happens, I'll be leaving.
I'll be you're not skipping Shavasana.
No, actually, don't do anything. Don't do any of the asana. Don't stay for any of it. Just lie down and do Shavasana,
yeah.
And you'll get more benefit from that.
That's what you need. Yeah.
And I think that being still, it's so hard for people to allow themselves permission to go, I actually have the right to do nothing right now because it's what my body's telling me I need to. Not because I've earned it, not because I worked really hard this week.
It's
not about that. It's like your body just needs rest.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't have to feel that you do something really hard first and then you allow yourself the chance to rest. It's like, no, we need to eat. We all know that. We need to breathe. We all know that.
Yeah.
We need to rest. And that should be a known
part
thing.
Of the plan.
And Shavasana, especially, you know, when it's a led relaxation, when it's a yoga nidra quality where you're being led into that progressive muscle relaxation.
Yeah.
It's so restorative. And really, the funny thing is that in a yoga class, I mean, in mine, maybe it's slightly longer because I really, really believe in it. So it might be like 10 minutes.
You're really pushing the boundaries when those type A's. They're like, come on.
I know.
Coffee's to have, people to meet.
Challenge it. But most people do a 5 minutes Shavasana at the end of their class.
Yeah.
But people resist it. I mean, they really resist. They really, and you can see
they're
lying down and they're
in it, but they're waiting for the end.
Opening their eyes, they're looking around, their legs are twitching, they're moving. You know? And it's not, you know, as a yoga teacher, you're not there going, wow.
Judging.
You're just thinking, gosh, you really need this Shavasana.
Yeah.
You know, because we just go. We just go. And there's this real, feeling, I feel, of people valuing busy. And, you know, the more you can go, I'm really busy at the moment.
Yeah.
You go, wow, that's so great.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but I just run off my feet busy. As if that's way better than going like, well, hey, I've got a really good work-life balance. And, you know, I got to have 2 days of rest this week. Great.
Yeah. I know,
people are thinking, I had
people in the shop before Christmas. All of my related stories will be from the shop, by the way. That's where I spent my life. So, people in the shop, there was two I remember distinctly, who, when I was asking, you know, in the week coming up, was like, you know, it was a constant bit of small talk conversation, but it was always really interesting what people are doing for Christmas. And two of them were like, I was you know, you hadn't had family, I know you've family in Waterford, and he's like, no, I'm just staying up here on my own. I was like, oh, you know, and they had to say it so quietly, like it was socially unacceptable to like take rest on your own and do nothing. Like even at that time of year, when it's actually about rest, about feasting, yes, and it's about sociability, but it's also about rest and restoration. And people felt so bad about it. Both people who said it, specifically the two I remember, who were like, they were really quiet about it. They knew it was a massive taboo.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
It's so wrong.
It's so wrong. And a change has to come.
Yeah.
It has to come. We're getting the signs in everything, in the rise of adrenal fatigue, which people that like to not believe in or call different things or whatever, in the rise of just general malaise, general tiredness.
Yeah, because we're only ever operating at 70% because there's never been that 0%, so there can never be that 100%. Yeah.
And in yoga we think about, well, actually in many disciplines we think about like how can you restore your energy levels, and you do it through breathing, you do it through exercise, you do it through food, you do it through drink, and you do it through rest.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times we're just not allowing ourselves to build that energy back up again, so we're constantly dipping into our primal energy, our energy that we were born with, and you can't get that back. Once you've burnt that energy, you're gone, and that's the end of that.
Same as digestive enzymes, same with this chipping away and taking away from like a set reserve. There's a refundable element to it, but if you want to go through the refunding of it like you went through, takes a lot of work and you don't ever want to go there.
It took ages. I got to a functional level of health very quickly from the bone therapy. But it really wasn't until, so I think I'm going to be think I'm going to be 36 this year. And
is that because you think you're allowed to say it? Or you
No. I just can't. I'm pretty sure it's 36. So either 35 or 36. So
you're 82.
82.
No, same. Yeah.
36.
36 this year.
Okay. I'm going to be 36 this year. And I think it was really only about, I want to say 8 years ago, that I started to feel, okay, I think I've got back to a state of equilibrium.
And then
I would have been like, oh, math isn't good, maybe 28, and I got it when I was like 18. So it really was a 10-year journey, and there were ups and downs. I had to keep committing to choosing to not go to parties all night long. I'd see all my friends, and they'd be out burning the candles at both ends, and I kind of felt like I was this wimp person not able to do that enjoying that, and people would push themselves, and I was always kind of slightly precious about it, like, no, I'm going to go home, I'm going to sleep early, and I knew my friends kind of had this idea of me as like
bit of a wuss.
Yeah, exactly. totally that.
I didn't mean that.
No.
Just describing what they thought.
But yeah, I mean, that I knew that there was that vibe going on, but I had to choose it because I was so terrified of going back to that place.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, I don't have that capacity anymore. It really drained me. And they say that Planet Fever never really leaves their system.
Yeah.
It'll always be there. Anytime you dip low enough, it'll just take its little footing and it'll come back again.
Yeah, you'll be able to watch
it. It can be present in lots of things. You can get like warts and growths and various different things that the virus is just like, it'll give you a warning sign of like,
you're still here.
It's a lifelong work, but I think had I not had that, had I not experienced being so ill and so depleted for so long, I wouldn't have the empathy for the people that I meet in my classes now, but I also wouldn't have the attitude towards the yoga that I do. You know, for me, the yoga that I teach isn't so much kind of
strong
asana that's like, hey, get your butt in shape or it's very much looking at how does this feel in your body, how can we affect change in our organ systems, how can we look at our health from the inside out.
The long game.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, that's that longevity kind of awareness which kicks in probably about like when you're 35. definitely changes what you want to do anyway from a physical point of view, doesn't it? Like, you... as a kid, I was kind of always interested to some degree in weight training. I was always super skinny, so when I did weights, I was like, you know, starting from like a pace of minus zero, or like below zero. But I find like in the last couple of years, like I started doing like body weight training and training with cables, and I find that I'm not sure whether I'm really like aware of it when I started, but I know that I feel that I recover better from it, and it gives me more energy than it takes away, and it doesn't tighten muscle. It's not about muscle shortening; it's about muscle lengthening.
Right.
And as much as I do those types of, you know, weight based whatever, kettlebell type exercise things, I would always be conscious of, okay, well, at least twice or three times this week there's going to be foam rolling, there's going to be maybe yoga, there's going to be something that's going to be like stretching, like active recovery essentially.
Essential.
And I think that balance kind of shifts around now, whereas before maybe you could do, you know, three more intensive things a week and then two recoveries. Now maybe it has to be two intensive things and maybe three recoveries. This is right at that kind of like little balance, I think.
Yeah.
The shift in balance. So is there anything when you have like, say, people who are the ones who want to run out of Shavasana and they won't take time? What's the like the minimum intervention you can tell them? What's the easiest minimum intervention do you think they can probably jump out and try themselves?
Well, it's so hard, and I think it depends on who you are and your personality type, and obviously those type of people tend to group. You seem to find that people who go very fast in their day, they gravitate towards the fast sports, and what they need is the slow sports. So in an ideal world, those people would be going to yin yoga, they would be going to restorative yoga, they wouldn't be going to ashtanga or vinyasa flow.
Yeah.
And almost always, I'll look at a group of dynamic in my class, and you might ask them, what type of yoga have you gone to? And I know straight away what they're going to say.
Yeah.
The people who are like ready, they're like vinyasa flow, Bikram, ashtanga.
Yeah.
And we gravitate towards what we want, what we feel comfortable with, and we need to go away from that. We need to find the balance, the yin and the yang, right, in our life. There's a really cool thing called a prana mat.
Okay.
Do you know the prana mat?
Oh, is this the one with the little acupuncture
points?
I have them. They're amazing. I meditate with one on my back sometimes or sometimes on my feet. Yeah,
They're so amazing. And they look like a yoga mat. They're nearly as long as a yoga mat. And they have little lotus-shaped spikes that stick up from them. And you can lie on them. So what a lot of my clients do is, if they're really busy and they don't have a day where I'm going for them to do yoga, they'll come home from work and they'll just lie on that mat.
Cool. For,
and they'll set a timer on their phone, they'll put their favourite song on, they'll listen to a podcast or yeah. whatever. If you find it's really hard
it's in an ideal world,
yeah, you can do that. Yeah. Or you listen to an audiobook. I mean, ideally you'd be just focusing on your breathing.
Yeah,
those little spiky things, they go in through the acupuncture points mm-hmm. and they just help to facilitate healing. So that's amazing. A really simple thing that you can do. You can buy it, you can even just sit on it so that your bum's on it and it's up the length of your back. Mm. If you were watching TV, that would be better than doing nothing.
Yeah.
So that would be a simple thing okay. that you can do. In an ideal world, you would do belly breathing.
Yeah, okay.
You know, simple breath techniques where you just find your belly, you have mm-hmm. your hands on your belly, and make sure that you're breathing correctly, because a lot of us reverse breathe now.
Mm.
When we're in that adrenaline state, when we're people who go, when we're really tired, maybe like me, you might be a mom who doesn't get a lot of sleep, you get into that place where your natural breathing, if you stop to listen, is here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're up in your chest.
Mm. And that's and you breathe through your mouth.
Yeah, and that's kind of panicky. That's the place that we get into when we're running really fast or when we're going in that fight and flight response. And that's all just feeding into our stress response. We're not in the parasympathetic nervous system. Yeah. Parasympathetic nervous system is our place of healing. It's our rest place. It's our recovery place. It's the place where our body listens. It balances our sleep rhythms, it balances our hormonal rhythms. It's just super important. And the quickest way to get into that parasympathetic nervous system is to bring your breath from here in the chest down to our belly. So if you put your hand on your belly and you inhale, inflate your belly like a balloon as you breathe in. And then as you exhale, pull the navel back towards the spine so you empty all the air from the belly. And then you're going to try and do that with nasal breath. So instead of breathing in and out through your mouth, you're breathing in through the nose, inflating your belly like a balloon. And then exhaling through the nose, pulling the navel back towards the spine. And just doing 10 rounds of that breath, just that alone would make a massive difference. There are much more complicated things you can do, but a lot of people will find when they sit down to do that, that as they inhale, they pull the navel back towards the spine.
It's all coming here.
And as they exhale, the belly flops forwards. And when you reverse breathe, you're just feeding back into that adrenaline cycle.
Interesting.
So if you are a reverse breather, it just means that this is now an opportunity for you to affect change in your body. And you just need to work to make that change. And as you do it more, as you spend that time sitting down with your hands on your belly, because we need that positive feedback reaction at the beginning. We need to feel like, okay, what is actually happening? Because sometimes our proprioception, our like awareness of what's happening in our body, is a little bit disconnected, because we've been in our head all day, we haven't been in our body. You're not lucky enough to work with your body all day like me, or even me, in fact, because I'm running after my son, and then I'm running to a yoga class, and then I'm not sleeping. You know, often I find that I'm here, and I'm a cerebral person, so it's easy for me to overthink and overanalyze and get into that headspace. I have to consciously go, hang on, okay, it's just 10 breaths. Everyone can achieve 10 breaths.
Great.
And then the more you can make that 10 breaths 3 times a day, 10 breaths right before bed, and then we can look at like building in breath patterns that are slightly more complex. But even just a belly breath, bringing you into the parasympathetic nervous system for a few minutes is huge.
It's one of the things I feel about smoke breaks that will be really sad when we lose smoke breaks. Because it's one of the few times that people actually consciously breathe these days.
Yeah.
And the people who don't have smoke breaks, A, they're harboring ill will towards smokers, because they're not getting these like random, whatever, 20 breaks a day that, you know, aren't in anyone's contract. But also they don't have this like chance to step outside what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And there's a social aspect to it, obviously, as well. But there's a really conscious breathing thing that goes on with smoking, which is like, I'm not trying to promote it, but it's really interesting. That's the last bastion of like, you know, people stopping doing what they're doing and stepping away from it and focusing on their breathing. It's weird and wrong that it happens to be smoking related.
Isn't it weird? But it's also it's encouraging. It's weird because it's allowed to take a smoke break whenever you want
to.
Because you're going, like, I need this for me right now. So right now I'm stressed.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to go and take this break.
So and that's allowed. It's a funny way to look at it, actually.
It is.
Yes.
Right, and everyone goes, okay, fine, you're smoking, or you need it, you're addicted.
Yeah.
Grand. Well, wouldn't it be great if you could just go, I need to go
breathe. For a breath break.
Like, I'm just going to go outside and take a breather.
So the rest of you go to, like, the toilets in your workplace, you know, do something else. Like, you're allowed to take toilet breaks as well, so maybe while you're on the toilet, that's a good time. And breathing is also really good to help to massage the colon and improve kind of evacuation, elimination. But find a way, because there are ways. We deny ourselves. And the worst thing is that the first thing to go is the one thing we need when we're stressed. Like, the first thing to go is usually our meditation practice, or it's our, the things that we do that are, like, good for us.
That's what they say. What's the thing they say if you don't have time... If you don't have an hour, or if you don't have 10 minutes to do your breath practice, you need 10 hours or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Give it the least time, need the most time. Yeah, yeah,
and you know that. And it's amazing how your mind... I was just talking to my brother about this last night, and he's having kind of a tough time right now. And I was saying to him, you know, really, you need to make time for meditation. Mm. It's great that you're doing hiking. It's great that you're doing yoga. But actually, what I feel like you need to do is spend some time listening.
That's his sister talking.
Being still. Uh-oh. Yeah.
That's got to go well.
And I'm like, actually, he was surprisingly good about taking it.
Oh, cool.
Nice. It's good. Our relationship is slowly getting there.
Yeah, he's so nice.
Yeah, I mean, how annoying to have me as a sister.
Right? Oh, lads. Yeah.
And as an older sister.
Oh, an older. I was going to ask that as well. Oh, that's
so
grim.
Annoying.
Oh, God.
Because you just want someone to go, listen, go drink.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go for a pint. Yeah.
And I'm like, don't do that. Yeah, that thing that you really want to do. Don't do the fun stuff. Be by yourself.
You're not the enabler now.
No, I'm not. Oh, I'm really not. Well, anyway.
But yeah,
I'm good in other ways. But I said to him, you know, you need to meditate. You need to find a meditation class, and you need to just take 10 minutes to sit. And I was saying to him, it's so fascinating that the mind does this thing where it's like, and it's for me too. It's not like because I'm a yoga teacher. Somehow I just find it really easy.
Mm.
You go, oh, I need to, I got to do my meditation today. Oh, but actually, I really got to do the laundry. And first, I better clean up that press that I haven't looked at for 20 years. And maybe I'll organize the shoe cupboard. And you find your mind finds every excuse to stop you from doing it. It just puts in these little barriers. Like, oh, yeah. No. And once you sit down, that's the easy bit. Once you're sitting in wherever it is, and it doesn't have to be the perfect space, you're sitting. And then you're like, oh, this is actually really nice.
Yeah.
Why don't I do this more often?
With silence. It's quite a treat. So I find, like, when I go home, I'm lucky enough to live on my own and don't have, like, I consider myself lucky in that way anyway. But some wouldn't. But, like, when I go home, usually there's... But there's, you know, nearly always, particularly where I live, there's, like, dogs barking outside. There's a lot of traffic. We're beside a Lewis stop, blah, blah, blah. But it's when I'm at the end of this little cul-de-sac, and the nights when you go home that there's no dogs barking, that there's no traffic, you really notice. And silence, and they say, what's that, like, peace comes dropping slow, that amazing poem. But you have this amazing bit, like, when you walk in the door, you suddenly go, like, you can feel that silence.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really therapeutic thing, having, like, a tiny bit of silence around you. Not having a podcast on, not having, you know, just even taking, like, even 15 seconds just to kind of, like, go, here are my hands, there are my feet, what do they feel like? Back to work, fine. But like,
that's it, isn't it? I think, you know, when I'm starting my classes, I always start with breath practice, and some people don't do that, but the breathing practice is so important for me in the pranayama. But more than that, it's because I'm getting people either in the middle of their workday or at the end of their workday. Mm-hmm. Usually, it's probably the first time that they've had all day to go, how do I actually feel? Because I usually say at the beginning, how's everyone feeling? Do you want, like, a stronger class? Do you want a stretch-based class? And people are like, yeah, I feel great. And then I'm like, okay, so let's just sit with that for a little bit, and let's just do a little mental check through our body of head, shoulders, neck, blah, blah, blah. Visit all the different places in your body and just see what they're telling you, so that you can use that information during class. If my shoulder's a bit tight, okay, I'm going to be gentle with that shoulder.
Yeah.
Oh, my stomach feels great. Maybe I'm going to work a little bit harder in my core practice or whatever. But usually people haven't stopped to think. They're just, we have this reflexive response of, how are you feeling? I'm grand.
Yeah, I'm grand.
Even if you're not grand, even if you're, like, terrible.
Yeah.
You're not, it's rare that you would go, I'm actually just terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to project the positive, but it's also, like, the awareness. I'm not everybody who asks how you are really wants to hear how you are. but by the same token, having, like, some, just cultivating the tiniest bit of awareness when like asking yourself. I mean, it's not when people ask you, it's really when you ask yourself that you want to give the full answer, isn't
That's it? Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is. But also, I think I do actually kind of feel that it would be nice if we were more
real about that response.
Real and honest, because I think, you know, even especially I found that when I was a new mum, that there's this idea that people always just are in bliss, that they're just having this lovely time. And especially for me, like, having been a pregnancy yoga teacher, a mum baby yoga teacher, I've worked with kids for years and years, because there was a period in my life where I worked as a super nanny, actually.
Okay.
And, you know, and I've worked with babies for a long time. And I love it, I love it, I love it. And I'd always wanted to be a mum. And my kid is amazing. But we had a seriously tough time. And he really just... You know, if there's a spectrum of kids who sleep and don't sleep, who have a tough time sleeping, my kid is at the far end of the tough time sleeping one.
Wow.
You know, and he didn't sleep in the daytime, and I had to walk him in a sling, and if I stopped for any moment, he would wake up. If I talked, he would wake up. Wow. If a dog barked, he would wake up. And so it was, we were plunged into this phenomenal stress situation from the moment that he was born. And everyone kept going, how are you feeling? Like, you must be just loving it. Are you just having such a lovely time?
Yeah.
And I was just like, I am not having
From the expression on your face, possibly not.
I was just like, I am not having a lovely time. But I didn't feel that I had any time that I dared to go, I'm actually not loving it. You know, and it wasn't, I'm not loving him. Of course I loved him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, I'm in deep depression. I wasn't. I wasn't in depression. I was so lucky. I didn't have postnatal depression or any of that. But if I was honest, I wasn't going, God, this is the best time of my life. I'm absolutely loving it. And I know loads of people have that. Like, I have a friend who gave birth recently, and her baby's super, super cool.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, like, she's in her power. She's loving it. You know, she is. And of course there are challenges. There's always challenges. But if I ask her, how are you? She's grand. And I know she's grand.
She means it, yeah.
But any time that I would voice that to someone, any time I would go, yeah, I don't know, I'm just not, you know, this is just not that great, people would be like,
uh-oh.
And they would get this fear, and then they wouldn't know what to do, and they just like freak out. And so I just stopped saying it. And then you get isolated.
It
stops you from finding the rest of the people who are going, hey, I'm having a tough time too.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
all you need is to hear one other person saying, hey, I relate to that. And then you're like, okay, I'm not insane. I'm not like this person who has no mothering instinct
just
or whatever.
Life. Yeah,
yeah, it's like, oh, actually, all these people are having a challenge. Okay, and then you just, it disappears, all that worry. It goes. And I think if we could just be a little bit more honest, like at the beginning of the yoga class, how are you feeling? Having a real tough day.
Yeah.
And then I could go, okay, I know what class you need.
Yeah.
Rather than like, I'm grand, and then me going, okay, let's do
pump it.
Up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
I think that's really healthy. I think we're...
I just feel like I haven't really... We've talked quite a lot about me.
Okay.
And I feel like we haven't really talked about your journey that much. And
possibly
how
true.
Did you end up... Because that's interesting. I mean, you think you might think it isn't. But how did you, like, go from being Finn who's at school to suddenly being Finn who runs this...
Okay.
Runs the Hupsack, knows all this stuff. Where did you do a training? Did you just learn it by osmosis? What happened?
Okay, so I'm strongly an autodidact. I discovered that... I found out what the word was a good few years afterwards, but I probably discovered that in school, and that I was terrible with rote learning. Well, no, I wasn't terrible with rote learning. I did loads of acting, but I was like, I didn't enjoy it. I really needed to understand the reason to learn something. That was my problem. I think if somebody could ever convince me there was a reason to learn something, like I had an amazing English teacher who sort of gave me just enough of a way in to, to kind of classics and stuff that I, it sort of like scratched the surface of an interest, but it was really scratched the surface, and I pretty much shut that door for another 3 years after his class, and he actually booted me out of his class. Amazing teacher, Niall McMonagall. I'll never forgive him, or can thank him enough for kicking me out of that class, because it made me learn a lot. But I think when I left school, because I didn't really have I was fairly wayward, to be honest with you, as a kid. I didn't really know exactly what I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I had no like ikigai, as they talk about, or whatever, no kind of real sense of purpose. I had a reasonably, gentle upbringing in suburbs of South Dublin. My parents were working very hard, obviously building the shop, and that was, it really wasn't even interesting to me at all, to be honest with you. It's weird, because I would pick up and drop things as a kid, like nobody's business, like hot potatoes. I had cupboards full of things at home that were like done for 2 weeks, and I'd say to my parents, I want to get all the karate pads now because I love this, and then 3 weeks later I'm like, I don't really like that class, I want to move on, I picked up and dropped a squillion things. I really enjoyed music, but I generally had this like slightly rebellious attitude to pretty much everything. If I was kind of told you something, I'm pretty much guaranteed to go no. And I think that's where my interest in health sparked from. My mum actually was really instrumental in this campaign that was kind of quite big in natural health in the late 90s, early noughties, about trying to preserve the availability of St. John's Wort. So St. John's Wort is this really powerful herb that has a great ability to support people's mental health and to support people who are going through kind of low mood. And because some claims were made around St. John's Wort, it was basically withdrawn. And it was interesting to see both that there was a big population that got mobilised to talk about that and to try and stop it from being banned, and also that how you could, Mum became this amazing kind of facilitator of that operation. She really had a huge part to play in a lot of the protests that went on. We got a signature that was more than 1% of the signature list or a petition or whatever of more than 1% of the population, which is a really statistically significant thing, which showed like there was this great grassroots network of people who were interested in using natural health. And for me, I loved that because it was rebellious. Mm-hmm. And because it was rebellious, suddenly I was like, actually now I maybe this is kind of cool. And not consciously, but that's certainly what the buy-in was for me. And it has been for me in anything I've done in life, probably. If it's considered wrong or social taboo, I'm kind of curious, which is dangerous. But like I have, I suppose, I went through like design college and kind of set up in, like a little design consultancy or whatever, like little Mickey Mouse thing. But it was fun, and we got some graphic design jobs, and we had fun. And then there was this moment where there was a real, like there was a major crossroads moment where we had this opportunity to work with Intel. And then my two colleagues were like, well, I don't know if we're ready. And I was like, come on, like you're never ready. And you have to, there's another one, you're never ready. There's our next oh, yeah. podcast. But then I had this other opportunity suddenly because I came home that Sunday and I was down in Carlisle. So I came home that Sunday and I was sitting down with my parents having dinner. And they started discussing selling the shop. And I honestly can't say I'm a person of like impulse anyway. I don't really think through what I'm going to do next. I'm not very good at like conceiving of what the route to go is, because by the time I've conceived of it, I'm bored of it already pretty much. Right. It loses all of its zest mm-hmm. for me if I'm kind of know exactly where it's going to end.
Yeah.
And so they said, do you think it's selling the shop? I said, well, I might be kind of interested maybe in, you know, getting involved. And they were like, really? Like I'd never shown a pin of interest. Not to them anyway, and although some of my buddies in college maybe I'd like help them a little naturally, but like not at all. I think I was having like organic muesli soaked in apple juice when everyone else was having like bangers and mash for breakfast. That was about as health foodie as I got at that stage. But then I was kind of like, yeah, I might be interested. And they were like, really? Like, how interested? I was like, well, like maybe I'll, you know, just come to work there. And they were like, okay, like when? They were like, maybe like next week or the week after. They were like, what? So I just jumped straight in. And I never made a better decision in my life. It's a really weird thing. Like there's no rhyme or reason to why I did it or why it makes sense. I love being self-employed. I love the fact that there's like an autonomy to that. I love being able to make decisions and make change in the environment that I'm in. I'm also addicted to change, which is probably not the most easy thing to live with or to work with.
But isn't it interesting though that you say that you're addicted to change and yet you're still working in the shop?
It's the only thing I've done. It's the only thing I've kept. I'm so proud of it. Literally, it's the only thing I've kept up for, Jesus, more than a year or two. I mean, I've had a couple of long relationships. I've had played the drums for a good while. Those are kind of, you know, things that you dive into. But from a career point of view, from a persistence, like a stubborn persistence point of view, there's nothing I've poured myself into like this. And I think I felt that it like gave back monstrous amounts. And I think because I poured myself so much into it, I learned so much so quickly. And you're asking about courses. I basically am an autodidact. I've done like, you know, a diploma in natural health, but like really small stuff. It sounds like, ooh, a thing. It's not a thing. It's such scratching the surface stuff. For me, it's always when, you know, I also have a strong kind of like a dissenting kind of voice in my brain, like I'm quite a cynic when it comes to, which is probably helpful when it comes to natural health, because if you're a total hippie coming to this, that's an awful word, we're making it, using it badly now, but if you find it easy to get invested in things, you'll go for everything. You'll go for everything. And like there are most things, I think there's no smoke without fire. There's most health food fads or trends, most weight loss diets. There's a kernel of truth in all of them. But I think unless you apply some sort of like gating mechanism where you really kind of like, okay, let's not just accept what the trainer says. So let's not look at their training manual, but let's kind of like see what we can find on the internet elsewhere. Let's see what we can find in books elsewhere. Let's go on Google Scholar and look at studies. Let's, you know, and make it very real. And I've always had that kind of attitude, certainly since I got into the shop. Like I need to know that this is really real before I'm going to go and tell people about it. Once I really know it's real, I'm really happy to tell people about it. Like,
and then, so do you feel like you've learned a lot of that stuff kind of by osmosis?
Yes. Do you mean like from my upbringing?
Yeah, but just even by having to go, okay, what products am I going to get into the shop, and then researching those products, and then learning, reading around those products, and then learning about them.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's the active research, but definitely there's an osmotic element to it as well. Osmotic. Where I think there's, you know, once you're this as immersed as I feel I am in terms of the world of health, you have like just constantly things are going around you, like new trends are emerging. Like for instance, like when it comes to like medicinal mushrooms, there was really, I don't think there's anybody else selling medicinal mushrooms in Ireland when we started selling them, maybe, I don't know, like close to 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, they've been around for hundreds of thousands of years. There's nothing that we're doing that's new. But the kind of new paradigms as they come along, I think that's probably one of the positive results of my kind of my will to, you know, to look at kind of those rebellious kind of like not done yet sort of things. Mm-hmm. And the kind of osmotic stuff, I suppose, comes on because those sorts of, if you go looking at natural health with fairly quickly, and certainly up in like 15-20 years, you'd have come across shaga mushroom from Siberia. Like, what is this weird looking conch that grows on a tree and keeps you healthy and fights all sorts of interesting diseases that we probably can't make claims about right here? But it's you know, I think those things do just kind of creep into your life, and it's up to you then obviously to grab onto them and really dig deep and find out, because you can't have everything. I mean, we're not a Chinese medicine shop, we're not a homeopathy hub, you know, you can't specialize in all those things, but I think we try to do a good job of what we do.
You definitely do. Like my danger place. I was thinking about this yesterday. You know, like how maybe some people, when they're having a tough day, their partner might go, here's flowers, or like here's chocolates, or here, go get yourself a massage, or hey, take some time for the TV. And my husband always goes, like, go to the health food store. And even if I don't buy anything, it's my happy place. I'm just there going, this is my home. You know, that article about I found my tribe.
Yeah.
I feel like my tribe just is the health food store.
Yeah.
I don't need to buy anything. I just feel like
just once you're in there. Yeah.
And yours is the pinnacle of that. And that's not just because you're sitting there, but it really is. There's loads of other health food stores, like the one in Greystones, Nature's Gold, amazing.
It's great,
and that's one of the oldest ones. It has a lovely open fire and it's super cool and everyone's really knowledgeable. But it's smaller, right? And yours is so cool because it's like every product that I might be going to a health food store to buy, I don't have to go to two of them.
Mm.
They're all in yours.
Yeah.
And then there's also this nice little cafe bit. And that's nice as well, because it means between my classes, if I'm in town, I always struggle to find healthy food that I can eat that's light. Because it's really hard if you've got an hour between classes. I might teach one yoga class and I've got another two back to back. I have to eat. But you don't want to practice yoga with loads of stuff in your belly. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And you've got to try and find something that's light enough, but also sustaining enough, and that tastes nice.
Yeah.
Because I'm a super foodie. Like, I love food, and it really annoys me when food is healthy but tastes of absolutely nothing. There's like literally nothing.
It's the last sensory pleasure, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It really is, and it has to look beautiful, and it has to taste beautiful, and it also has to be good for your body.
Yeah.
And yours is nice like that, because it's not going, here's 100 options. It's like, there's two. And there's some breakfast stuff.
Yeah.
And then you choose one of those. And
you're
also just giving yourself a sensory
break.
Here's my choice.
True. And we're going to maybe explore in later podcasts as well some of your and my like baking efforts and ways to maybe like make simple, really super healthy food as well.
Yeah, simple choices that you can make for yourself that are really easy. For me, like, I'm time poor, right? And also poor. Poor and time poor. So I have to do a lot of baking because, well, actually baking just makes me happy, but for my son, I just want to make nice things for his lunchbox every day. But also, we have, at various different times in the last year, there's been people in my family that have been gluten-free, dairy-free, nut-free, egg-free, sugar-free, fruit-free, caffeine-free, because there's been a lot of stomach stuff.
And for a lot of people who come into our shop, you get that, like, that kind of list of whatever is intolerance, and they're like, There's nothing on my plate.
And there should be some, and there's so much stuff that you can make that's delicious.
That
for me, it has to be healthy, it has to be quick, and it has to taste good. And those are the three top things. So I was thinking we can do things, little takeaways that you can do, quick things that take under 5 minutes that you could do while your kid was playing, that you could do while the kettle's boiling, while you're even watching a show, that you can quickly put them together. You make a batch of them, put them in the freezer, and then you defrost them every day or every couple of days.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So that would be a fun thing that we could do for sure.
I would definitely be making Susan Jane White's tahini fudge 100%. Have you made
so
that?
So good, yeah.
It's
made like a million different ones.
Versions of it. I know, that's the thing. Once you have the basics, that's what's great about a lot of the recipes we'll be talking about. There's a lot of things there, and this is why I love maybe like American recipes where they have a cup of this, a cup of that, because it makes it like super fast. There's no scales.
Cups
and
are the best,
because
once you have those little cups, it's just, okay, there we go, there's none of this.
You get familiar with it, you just remember exactly what it is, rather than, was that 375 or 350 grams? Like, forget
too hard.
It. It's a cup.
So also I was thinking, we haven't said, so we talked about why we came together, we knew each other, we suddenly felt like there was this symbiosis of, oh, hang on, we kind of both are moving. We're from, obviously you have a shop and I teach yoga, so it's not quite the same. But we're both in that.
Same sure, come on. Tomato.
We're both in this health and wellness sphere, and we thought it would be a nice thing to come together to do this podcast and share the little bits of knowledge, or just share our interests of chatting, and think that people might find that interesting. They might get stuff to take away.
Yeah.
But also, we were thinking that it would be good. Where would we do this podcast, right?
Oh,
and we were trying to conceive of the notion of it. And we talked a lot about how we feel like there's a lot of, what's the word, were you saying framing? Was that the word you were saying?
Casts.
Casts.
Yeah.
So now in our modern life, we're kind of restricted in loads of ways. It could be that you sit in front of a desk all day and you've got your computer right here and this is just like your box.
Mm.
Or you could live in a really small apartment. You might not have a garden. Mm. It could be that you sit in your car a lot all day long and you're
that's basically
driving.
Tick, tick, tick. Everybody is in that situation.
All those things. And then you get home, you're exhausted, and it's not like you're going out to go in nature because it's late, it's already dark. So then you sit in front of a TV or you might sit in front of your computer, you might have to do more work or whatever. And we've limited ourselves. And I think there's a massive reflection, or I feel that there's a reflection on how we limit our thoughts, how we limit our awareness, how we limit our consciousness when we get into ever smaller and smaller and smaller spaces.
Yeah.
My stepfather, he's an artist, and he always talks about this need to stretch the eye and how important it is to be able to look and look and look and the horizon be so far away that your eye distance is like far, far out there.
As far as it can be,
And that stretches everything. So we were looking at, okay, well, if we're doing this podcast, we want the thoughts to be flowing freely
and expansive and
rambling and reflective of the environment that we're in. And so we thought that it would be interesting if this is our introductory podcast, but after this one, from here on out, we would be in
an asterisk just in case.
Yeah, unless it's really raining or something.
Yeah, although we like the rain.
Yeah, maybe it was snow. I don't know. Hail, possibly.
Tornadoes.
We're going to be in nature, and we're going to choose places of natural beauty around Ireland to highlight how beautiful the place that we live in is, because often I think we think that we have to go like to Italy or to Thailand or whatever, but actually we've got all this
so
beautiful
tremendous.
Stuff on our doorstep. And so we're going to just choose different places that we can go that are achievable for everyone to go to, that aren't going to be like 1 hour's drive. It's just going to be like
20 minutes
or something. And then we're going to just sit and talk.
And ramble chat. And we might even have some guests. We might even ramble up the side of a hill.
That's
with the
idea, to invite people up the mountain and share their knowledge. And so that we can bring together people who are in the health and wellness sphere, like us, who are in Ireland, support those local Irish people. Not needing to look outside, because we have this huge culture, this really rich depth of knowledge that's
phenomenal.
Right here.
Like really phenomenal. And I think a lot of people in Ireland are maybe afraid to show their chops, that like that they kind of demonstrate that they have knowledge about something. Like, we both run from that expert tag. I don't have it. You actually do have it, but
I really don't have it.
Yeah, but anyway, let's see. That's what we're like. So we're both Irish then, but we're not big drinkers. Weird. So we only tick one of those boxes. But so to try and find those people who might be hiding the light under a bushel. There's so many people who I've come across in my life. Anyway, I'm sure you have as well. Mm-hmm. Who have like so much to give, and actually those people that you learn the most from are not the people who are like the big, you know, locuses of health knowledge and perceived health wisdom. It's not the Dr. Mercolas of this world, but there's, you know, somebody who just lives down the street who's like an amazing traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, great acupuncturist, and just, Jesus, has all this joined up knowledge that they can talk and we can have some chats, hopefully.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's the plan.
So that's us.
Cool. Last thing, because we're doing a giveaway with every podcast as well, so we want you guys to send in your comments and suggestions for who you want us to chat to, where you want us to chat,
what you want us to chat about.
Sorry, I knew I was missing one. And whatever else you want to tell us about. So you'll be able to find us, hopefully, well, you will find us on YouTube, and you'll be found us on one or other, possibly iTunes. We're going to be giving away a sack full of goodies from Newzest, really lovely quality hole wall, which is a nice size for the gym, and it's a nice size for yoga, or for maybe for not doing it, a nice size for just being quiet with.
Right, but just giving yourself
just going
a break.
Home. Maybe just lie on it.
Here's me in my bag.
Yeah.
Taking time
off. Put a towel inside. Pretend you went to the gym actually, and just go somewhere else, go to a park and lie down. Perfect.
Exactly that.
There's a good idea.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, today. Yeah, okay. That's all right. We won't tell anyone. but yeah, sack full of goodies every podcast. So. Hope you enjoy it. We hope you got something to offer that you like.
Yeah, something worthwhile to talk about.
Fingers crossed. I'm sure we will. Deadly. All right. Thank you, guys.